This episode of the Die Hard Den podcast was recorded prior to Super Bowl 54. Coming up on this edition of the Die Hard Den podcast, Shawnee J and I look at some possible free agents for the Lions coming up in 2021. Then, Shawnee J does an all-pride profile on a legendary Lions coach. Now You Know covers something essential to the game, the ball. All this and more coming up on this edition of the Die Hard Den podcast. Watch out. Here comes that roar.
What up, though? This is Kurt Steele, and welcome to the Die Hard Den podcast. And as always, I'm with my man, Shawnee J.
What's happening, Kurt? Sam, people?
Hey, it's good to be back on the show. And one thing I want to thank the people, I noticed that our Facebook page is growing by leaps and bounds. We're getting a lot more likes, so we appreciate you supporting the page and the podcast. So, like we always do at this time, it is time to tell me something good. And this week, got a couple things. Kenny Golladay balled out at the Pro Bowl. 3 catches for 109 yards, led all the receivers for the entire Pro Bowl. And like he said on Instagram, should have been there in the first place. Another thing coming out of the Pro Bowl, Darius Slay honored Marvin Jones Jr. and his family on his cleats for the Pro Bowl. And he definitely paid tribute to Marlo, the young son that the Jones family lost here a few months ago. So big shout out to Darius Slay. You got anything to add, my man, for telling me something good?
Not really. You stole my thunder. Those are the two things Lions related. I got a lot of tell me something sad, tell me something bad. We wait on the show. I think you know we're going with this.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later. We always start off with the positive. So now it is time to go on the ball. And this week, I wanted to touch on some free agents. Now, I looked at NFL.com and looked at the top 25 free agents that are available for this season. And I took some names off the list for offense and defense, and we're going to discuss them during the show. But first up, it's offense. So I'm going to read some names off. You tell me what you think, man. Now, the first one is Joe Tooney from the Patriots. He's a guard. We think about my man, Joe Tooney. He was a second team All-Pro this last season.
Can you give a little more about him? Can you give me his age and his height and his weight?
Nah, he's about 27. Don't know his age. I mean, don't know his height and weight, but he was an integral part in that the offensive line for the Patriots this last season. They say he was what makes him a hot commodity, that he was a second team All Pro. And the second guy I got is Brandon Scherff from the Redskins. Now, they say he had the PFF score as one of the top run-blocking guards in the league.
Okay, I'm a little more familiar with Scherff. I know our Lions fans are getting tired of, you know, signing these former Patriot players and coaches. So may not be too keen on the first guy you mentioned from New England. Scherff is a possibility. It all depends, like I say, you know, his size, age, you know, will he be an upgrade? I feel like guys, I didn't like that rotation they were doing last year. Okay, guys, I wish he was re-signed Graham Glasgow. We're playing around because he's been our best offensive lineman the past few years. Durable and reliable. You know, I love Bo.
Right.
I'm a man Bo. Maybe that's why they want to let Graham walk. He's going to summer man Bo, perhaps, from Wisconsin. And Joe Dahl, remember a few years ago, drafted, the group was waiting for him. They thought he was going to be a starter right away. Well, it doesn't always happen that way in NFL. It took a couple of years. Waiting, the Lions obviously liked him because they gave him an extension of he was starting his first game. So I kind of like our guys. We bring Glasgow, Bo, and Dahl back. If you want to add a new guy, I wouldn't be totally against it. But I kind of like guards. I want to keep it intact. We drafted those guys or sign them, you know. I want to see us cultivate our own players at the guard position.
Right. A couple more names here. The next name is Derrick Henry, running back, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't mind having him. He led the NFL in rushing, but, you know, there's some talk that Tennessee may let him walk because he may want too much money. Now, two things here. Will Tennessee be so foolish to do the same thing Jerry Jones did a few years ago? We let DeMarco Murray walk after he led the league in rushing. Let's see. I know he's 20 years old. He's a 5-year veteran. He has a little mileage on him. I wouldn't mind having him, but you know, once again, our Lion fans are always going to cost too much money. He's going to ask too much money. Well, you what you pay for. And they don't want to draft the running back. They don't want to sign him back. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with some Lions fans. I mean, they think this draft or sign any bum off the street is going to rush for 2,000 yards for you. No, it's not going to work that way. So if you sign Henry, I want to draft a young guy, maybe the second or third round, like Jonathan Taylor or A.J. Dillon. I know you like Dobbins. Right. If he's there, I might take him too, but I like the bigger guys, like him.
And the last name on offense I'll say is offensive tackle Jack Conklin from Tennessee. He had a bounce back year coming off the ACL tear in 2018. He had a really good year for the Titans last year.
Right, the former Sparty, Jack Conklin. Him and the former Wolverine down there, Taylor Lewan. This is Spidey and the Wolverine can get along. Conklin, well, you know, when you come off a serious injury like that, that kind of scares you. But he had to prove it to me, Cease. He came back strong. So all depends on if he's still sound. I wouldn't mind having him upgrade the tackle position. You know, even though the Lions is kind of like Terrell Crosby, he has injury concerns like the concussions. But I wouldn't mind having Conklin, you know, if they can sign him. Sure, I wouldn't mind having him.
Right. That's the person that probably on this list I would probably say the Lions would have the most interest in, probably Conklin. I don't think Tennessee lets him walk because of the year he had. Now, he could be a good replacement for Rick Wagner, who's getting a little long in the tooth and had some injury concerns last year. But I could see that happening. That's the person that probably, out of the group of four on offense, I think that the Lions should take a look at signing.
If we can get both Henry and Conklin from Tennessee, as well as the linebacker coach, it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. That would be a total shift. Like you bring the Titans north. So, but that's what we have on the ball. Now, let's go defend the den and look at some top defensive free agents. Now, these are some bigger names as far as on the defensive side of the ball. First guy up, Yannick Njoku, the defensive end out of Jacksonville. He had 8 sacks last year with 50 pressures on the quarterback. What do you think about Yannick Njoku?
I like him. He's one of the guys who I was looking at signing for the Lions. I like him. You know, just see the posts I put in the group this past week. You know, they say pass rushing in may not be necessarily high on the Lions list, even though they generate very little pressure on quarterbacks. And as fans are scared for pass rusher, the Lions, I think part of that might have been the scheme they asked on the play, but they got some guys with potential, like Romeo Okwara. He had an off season. He's big and strong, and he has 7.5 sacks in 2018, his first year with us. Only 1.5 last year. I think Patricia's thinking, and I'm thinking, that a lot of the lack of pressure was scheme that they ran last year, what they asked him to do, mainly just guard the line instead of really go after the quarterback aggressive. So hopefully more aggressive and maybe not the personnel to rush the pass like Flowers and Okwara. And I still like Austin Bryant, the guy from Clemson who didn't play much. And Kennard, I still like Kennard, but I still wouldn't mind drafting or signing a free agent pass rusher. So he's one of the guys from Jacksonville.
Right. The rest of these guys are all that same type of position because you got the outside linebacker or edge rusher, Shaq Barrett out of Tampa Bay. And then I have defensive end. And Leonard Williams from the Giants and Bud Dupree, outside linebacker, edge rusher from the Steelers. Now, they consider him a poor man's D Ford as far as Bud Dupree is concerned. And you already know about Shaq Barrett having a career year in the last year with 19.5 sacks.
You know, we talked about this. That bothers me. How do you go to such a leap so fast in 1 year that huge? It kind of worries. He raises eyebrows. I mean, it's one thing to have a good season, to have a Lawrence Taylor type season. It raises eyebrows. When you're just a mediocre linebacker for most of your career, it makes you raise his eyebrows. And was he using something? That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Well, you know, I don't know. What do you think about Leonard Williams, former number 6 overall pick at the Giants, a former Jet, played at the Giants last season?
Yeah, another former Giant. You know, we've seen like Patriots and Giants players. If at the right price, you can bring him over because, the way they use their defensive linemen, they rotate. You know, I don't mind using a rotation on a D line, but the O line's different. The O line's better if they stay together, one cohesive unit. But But the defensive line, right, they're always switching guys, trying to keep guys fresh. So it's just a strange thing. The offensive line got to stay together. But the defensive line, you know, rotation isn't bad, a bad thing. So if you bring in Williams, right, you know, it can hurt. He's a big fella. He's a good pass rusher. I wouldn't mind having him here at all.
Right. The only thing about Bud Dupree, I think he's a little undersized for Patricia's scheme. But, you know, he could fit the role. But, all right, looking at those guys, we already know who I said. I said it last week. I'll say it again right quick. I would like Shaq Barrett, but, you know, we'll see how the Lions approach free agency coming up here in the next month or so. So we'll see how that's going to go. All right. Is there any free agent that you want to see that I didn't mention for the Lions to sign?
Well, I haven't seen the entire list yet. Like the guy from Jacksonville, you mentioned, and that Olave Henry too. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe Conklin, offensive lineman. So if we got those three guys, nice. Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. So that's it for Defend the Den. Now it is time for 2 points conversion. Now, here is where the sad portion of the show is. Now, I will say this. I know this is a Detroit Lions podcast, but I'm a huge Kobe fan for years. I watched him ever since he got drafted by the Hornets and traded to the Lakers on draft night. It's a sad thing when he died and his daughter died. And I'm going to read the names of all the individuals who died. In the helicopter crash on Sunday, Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, or Gigi as they call her, John Altobelli, his wife Carrie, and their daughter Alyssa, Christina Mauser, and who was the assistant basketball coach at the school, the Mamba Academy. You have the pilot Ara Zobana, and Sarah and Peyton Chester, which is another parent and a player for the Mamba Academy. My heart goes out to all of those families. It's just a sad thing. And I would say I definitely broke down. My wife woke me up from a nap to tell me the news, and it was definitely a sad day for the sports world, because I think Kobe Bryant transcended sports. You know, he was a larger than life, you know, basketball legend, where, you know, people would shoot a piece of paper in a trash can and say Kobe, you know, or people who don't even know, you know, basketball, they know who Kobe
right. Bryant is. This generation is Michael Jordan or Julius Erving.
Yeah. And it was crazy. Like the hockey team out in LA, the whole team, the LA Kings, had a home game the other night, and they came into the arena wearing Kobe jerseys. And all the ice attendants, the guys who shave the ice down and make sure the ice is good for the hockey game, they all had on Kobe gear. And at the LA Kings game, half the crowd had on Lakers jerseys because they were honoring Kobe Bryant and his daughter. They had a shirts made that had a 8 and a 24, and it had Kobe on one side and Gigi on the other. So, I mean, it's just an outpouring. I pray for his family. It was just a sad day. I definitely was a big fan of Kobe Bryant, and it's hard for me to express in words how I feel about Kobe Bryant passing.
Yeah, so sudden, you know. He was still young, only 41 years old. And when things like this happen to some big name celebrities like Kobe Bryant, it makes you rethink your own life. I mean, it happened to him, but it's going to happen eventually. Mm-hmm. It happened so suddenly, you know. I know you don't get to choose your way to go, but it seems like his life, it definitely was cut short. He was, you know, enjoying life as a, you know, if after 20 years in the NBA, he was enjoying being a father and a husband to his wife and kids. I mean, running the academy, he had many business interests going on. It makes you wonder the future of the Mamba Academy and all that stuff. What they along with Kobe, or where someone keep it going, living his legacy, is, you know, his wife keep it going, or somebody. You know, worry about the future like that. Like when Steve McNair tragically lost his life a decade ago. All his business closed, like his restaurant and other things. They are closed. So you still want to think about that. But, you know, Kobe, may he rest in peace, and same thing with his daughter and all the other people who were aboard that copter. And they may never figure out what really happened, what went wrong, what caused the crash. Because the pilot you mentioned, he was a very experienced pilot. He had 8,000 hours worth of flight tanks, very experienced. He used Kobe's like personal chauffeur in the air. He flew Kobe around everywhere. So, I mean, one thing I do question, that helicopter was old. It was 1991 model. I mean, you would think they would have a newer model. This is 2018 or 19, some 20, a 91 helicopter. That was old. That's the first thing I look at.
Yeah. And I think that not only that, it was the weather reports. Like, that was, for me, an issue is that, you know, even the police had grounded their helicopters during that time frame. So I know that they were trying to get to, you know, the sporting event. They were going to the actual Mamba Academy basketball game for the girls. And it just kind of makes you wonder the judgment of taking that, you know, with the weather being what it was. They had a lot of fog.
That's right. Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. I mean, it's still tragic that, you know, that these individuals lost their lives. And one thing that, you know, you didn't kind of hear it, but, you know, just hear it now, is that the little nickname they have for his daughter, because they said she was carrying on his legacy. He even said she was better at basketball at 13 than he was. And they were called, you know, they call him the Black Mamba. So they were calling her Mambacita. So, but rest in peace to those individuals. Now, you have an individual you want to mention as well that passed away.
Yes, we got lost in the aftermath of the Kobe Bryant tragedy. The sports world, NFL, lost a Hall of Famer. For you guys, your younger generation may not ever heard this guy. I'm sure the Viking fans who listen to remember well. Back to the number one draft pick in 1985, Chris Dolman, the awesome defensive lineman, you know, one of the best pass rushers in NFL history, who played his first nine seasons with the Vikings from 85 to 93. He spent a couple years with both the Falcons and the 49ers before returning for a final season with the Vikings in 1999. And if you recall, he put on the 98 game with the 49ers when the Lions on Monday night, he injured Charlie Best's back. You know, in that game, mm-hmm. We caught that game on Monday Night Football and during the tackle, but it did knock him off for the rest of that season. He and Minik Odomo was a class act. He apologized to Batch. Still, he's one of the most fierce pass rushers in NFL history. That's what I'm saying. The Vikings have luck when it comes to pass rushers. Look at the Alan Pages and right. The Jim Marshalls and the Carl Ellers and of course, Keith Millard and Dolman and, of course, John Randall. And look at the guys now. They have so much luck. Yeah.
Randall. And Allen.
Jared Allen is correct. Yeah, there's so much luck with pass rushers. How come we can't get pass rushers? That's what I want for the Lions.
Even
exactly. So I mentioned, like, the guys that got, you know, Everett, what's his name? Everett Griffin. And a couple other guys. I mean, they have so much luck when it comes to pass rushers. So that's, to help protect Stafford, it wouldn't hurt to upgrade the offensive line. I like what we have, but we great. But like I said, back to Dolman, he was one of the best pass rushers in NFL history. And he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. And his passing kind of got lost with the passing of Kobe. But he was only 58 years old himself. He wasn't old at all. And may he also rest in peace.
Right. All right. So moving on with 2 points conversing, we have a couple more things to talk about this week. Now, I'm going to get your thoughts on the mock drafts. Now, the mock drafts, most of them have the Lions taking Jeff Okudah out of Ohio State, the cornerback. Now, the other two guys mentioned in that first round, we're talking about the first round, that pick number three, is Derek Brown, the defensive tackle out of Auburn, and Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker out of Clemson. Out of those three individuals, which one do you think that the Lions should pick up at number three?
If it was me, who I think they should pick up, who I really want, I love Simmons. He's a great athlete. He can play all three positions. Mm-hmm. He can rush the passer. He can cover the tight ends, receivers. He's all over the field. He's an all-around kind of guy. He's kind of like Brian Urlacher was when he came out of college 20 years ago. Urlacher, remember, he was a big safety, all-around guy out of New Mexico State, I believe, that's where he went to college. And the Bears drafted him, and he put on some weight. He became one of the best middle linebackers in NFL history. Simmons, he's an athletic 6'4", 230, a little light, but he's very fast and very athletic. I guess he can rush the passer. He can cover running backs and tight ends. He played a run. He can be all over the field. He's not restricted to playing cornerback or defensive tackle, defensive end. So for that reason, versatility, you know how Pat, Patricia, and Quinn love versatility. I want I would love Simmons because you can play him anywhere and everywhere.
Right. I get what you're saying. He's a little light. His body still hasn't matured yet. As far as an athlete, your body starts maturing that mid-20s, at 25, 26, where, you know, you can put on more muscle. If you even look at some of the athletes in the league, as far as even like, say, basketball players, you look at LeBron James when he was younger, 19. But when you look at his body when he became, you know, that bigger, you know, bigger superstar where he was all around, he started maturing. You know, you put on that more muscle mass, and that's what happens in those mid-20s. And he can put on some poundage and still keep his speed. For me, I think I like the Okuda. I like him across from Slay. If you haven't checked social media, they've already developed a rapport. You know, they have already
I saw that. They exchanged phone numbers. He wants them in Detroit. I saw that in the paper or online this week. So yeah, Okuda, he's a good player. But like I say, you know, my reasons. So Simmons is all around, and unless Okuda's a Deion Sanders type player. You know?
You keep saying Deion Sanders is a once in a generation. We might not ever in our lifetime.
That's right. He was the best. He was almost a Lions guy, remember? The Lions won. Barry.
Yeah.
But Deion turned him off. He said they're going to pay him so much money to put some in layaway. That's the classic line.
Yeah. To be honest, you know, I think the closest thing to Deion, and I can't even say that because he was a different type player, was like Revis. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are once in a generation type of guys who come along, and you know, you don't come along so, you know, as often, where the best corner in the game right now is Gilmore. But, and you really didn't see him coming out of South Carolina. He was kind of quiet, but he still didn't have all the tools of Deion Sanders.
And the Lions did have their Deion Sanders 20 years before Deion, Hall of Fame player, and the supernatural and Bernie. He did not. Yes.
So, I mean, those are just generational players. If you give me a good, solid lockdown corner across from Slay, that makes it harder to throw on the outside, and Justin Coleman gets back to his early season form, I think they can be good in the secondary. I like that pick at number three for the Lions. All right, so here's the topic that was interesting, and we'll have our last topic for 2 points right now. Is Richard Sherman's and Calvin Johnson's comments lately about the Lions as an organization. We'll touch on Richard Sherman first. Richard Sherman said the Lions offered him more guaranteed money than the 49ers, but he wanted more incentives, so he bet on himself and took the 49ers offer. But one of the reasons he said he didn't want to sign with Detroit, he didn't like the culture of the team. He didn't like the leadership and the ownership group for the Lions. So he said the culture of the team was off, and he just didn't want to play in Detroit because of those reasons. Calvin Johnson have said some of the same things. He said that the Lions organization did not invest in the players. Now, this is before Bob Quinn took over. The Lions didn't have a nutritionist. You know, he was looking at the holistic approach to the health and nutrition for the Lions and the Lions players, and how the Lions as an organization took care of their players. And with those comments coming out, do you think that the Lions have a serious culture issue from the leadership that trickles down into the rest of the organization?
Sally, I think they do, because these are some embarrassing statements made by two high-caliber all-pro type players, or in Calvin's case, a former player, who are, you know, might be future, should be future Hall of Famers one day, both of them. It's embarrassing for the Lions, you know, if they weren't the laughing stock already. This confirms that. I hate hearing it because, you know, I love my Lions, and, you know, I hate to see him embarrassed like this, you know, called out like this, but it is what it is. It's like when Bear retired 20 years ago and Calvin retired, and Sherman's comments, other players' comments, it's an indictment. Players go looking, like you said, free agents coming out. Players going to listen to these guys. He said, I don't go to Detroit. gonna be losing and mistreated. I don't care how much they pay me. So I read an article on Sports Alliance Sports Illustrated page. I get they say how to repair their image and get players to come. First of all, number one, they gotta take care of Calvin. The Patriot way doesn't always work. I mean, it may be a good business way, but sometimes good business is not good for PR, especially when it comes to the same thing with Barry. I thought the Lions mistreated Barry 20 years ago. The two best players in their team's history, you treat them like this. You probably saw the funny meme this summer when Andrew Luck retired unexpectedly with the Colts. But it was injuries, you know, because he got hurt a lot, including he missed a year. Anyway, there's a meme. The Colts let him keep his signing bonus, saying that's where it back. And it kind of had a puppet looking kind of, you know, like, you know what I'm talking about, that meme. Yeah, you saw it was posted in our group, and I posted in the group. It's right, you know, Detroit Lions looking kind of sheepish, you know, because the way he treated Barry and Calvin, and among other players. So they definitely got repair with Barry. I'm glad Barry's in good graces again with us. They got repair the situation with Calvin, and other teams will get respect, and of course, winning. The Patriot way doesn't always work everywhere. I mean, it may work in New England, but it doesn't work necessarily work everywhere. You know, can't take that approach everywhere. That's like when you see so many players, when they leave a team, they don't have the same type of success. Because look at a good example. Some running back, the former Steeler running back, Bell, Woodberg, went to the Jets. He had a crappy season. The Jets ripped him already. Because he didn't have that same support group in Pittsburgh. The offensive line, the quarterback, the coaching staff. So they expect the same Le'Veon Bell from 5 years ago. They're vastly disappointed, Jets were. So they need an image makeover for sure. How they handle players, and we got to start winning.
Right. I agree with you 100%. I do think the Lions have an issue with their leadership, with the ownership group. I think they just made some bad decisions. I really don't think, especially the last few years, they did some decisions that are definitely questionable, where you've gotten rid of some key pieces on both sides of the ball. And I think really, to be honest with you, I really think that it was a mistake to let Jim Caldwell go. That's just me. People are going to, you know, Jim Caldwell was a winning coach. Did he make the playoffs every year? No, but he was a winning coach.
And fans want to get rid of him too. Yeah. Some fans want to get him fired.
Yeah, so I'm not understanding that. I didn't like the Quandre Diggs. I didn't like the Golden Tate, you know. There was just some things that I understand that it's a business that you don't, you know, understand that Golden Tate was probably getting a little longer in the tooth and he's going to be more expensive to sign. And they've had some bad contract signings in the past that definitely hold over the Lions' head and salary cap. They should have some decent cap space coming up for the next season. We'll see if it pans out, but I think there is a leadership issue. Do I want the force to sell the team? It may be time. Am I wishing for them to sell a team? Not quite there yet, but there needs to be a culture change. Well, hopefully we'll see with all these coaching changes that we have coming up here for the next season that we can change the culture and get some winning football in Detroit.
Most definitely. I can't wait for next Lions season already. And the Super Bowl is this weekend. And it brings up another question, you know, maybe off. Look, will you watch XFL the week following the Super Bowl, you know, give you a football fix?
I probably will. I'll take a gander. I'll probably take a peek at it just to see, you know, because I'm a sportscasting major. You know, if you don't know, that's, you know, one of the reasons why I started the podcast. And me too. I just like sports. Football. I'll take a look at it just to see. All right. So that was 2 points conversing this week. Some good topics. When we get back from the break, my man, Shawnee J, is going to have a our prior profile on one of the greatest coaches in Lions history. we're back from the break. Shawnee J, who do you have for this week's Our Pride profile?
Today, I'm going to profile not a player, but a coach. He's, all depends on how you look at it, the greatest or the worst coach in Lions history. He's sadly the winningest, losingest coach in Lions history. He's a legend in his own mind, at least. Not other than Mr. Wayne Fonts, the Lions' all-time winningest and winning and losingest coach from 1988 to 1996. Wayne Fonts was born on February 2nd, 1940 in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Wayne's 80th birthday will be this Super Bowl Sunday. Wayne went on to play his college football at Michigan State University. Boo! But anyway, I still love you, Wayne. He played 1 year pro ball with the old New York Titans, who were the forerunners to New York Jets in 1962, before suffering a career-ending injury. After a decade, he went to coaching, and he took his first coaching job as assistant coach at USC with the legendary John McKay from 1972 to 1975. Wayne went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with McKay, where he first served as the assistant coach the first 5 seasons, the last few seasons under McKay as the defense coordinator. When McKay was fired by the Buccaneers, Wayne obviously lost his job. He became the defensive coordinator for the Lions in 1985 under new head coach Daryl Rogers. Despite losing records, Wayne, in the first few seasons, Wayne won the respect of his players, and his defense units were pretty tough. His style kept the Lions in games back in those days. When Daryl Rogers was fired after a 2-9 start in 1988, Wayne Fonts was hired as interim coach for the final 5 games. We won the final 2 out of the final 5, both over the Green Bay Packers, but the players convinced then-owner William Clay Ford to give him a chance to hire him on full-time. Wayne Fonts became the Lions' full-time head coach in 1989, and one of the most brilliant moves he made, because he had a lot of personnel say back in those days. For his very first draft, he convinced the Lions to take one of the greatest running backs in NFL history, Mr. Barry Sanders, and the two would be interconnected for the rest of their careers. Wayne Fonts, after a couple of the first rough seasons, they had the teams competitive, but they weren't quite winning enough, and so the fans started getting his back. But they had their breakthrough season in 1991, when he won a club record 12 games and made it all the way to the NFC Championship game, where they unfortunately lost big to the loss to Washington Redskins. However, before that, they had the Lions got their only playoff victory since the 57 championship game, with 38-6 thumping over the Dallas Cowboys. Wayne Fonts, over the next few years, his teams generally got off to slow starts, but they only had strong finishes and made the playoffs 5 out of his 9 seasons with the Lions. However, they had early exits and the fans became impatient. He went all the way to 1996, where he finished with a 5-11 record, which spelled the end for Mr. Wayne Fonts' career in Detroit. But he's always very entertaining. He's popular with a lot of fans and players, even though a lot of fans were on the fire and a media scene to get on fire every week. He named himself the Big Buck because he dodged all those rumors and you know, about him getting fired. And he was also known as Mr. December for his strong finishes and make the playoffs after slow starts. Wayne Fonts has been residing in Tampa Bay, where he still remains popular and attends Tampa Bay Buccaneers games on a regular basis, and he's still very popular here in Detroit. He was voted on the Lions' all-time team as their head coach. So Wayne Fonts, the Big Buck, Mr. December, love him or hate him, always be a big part of Lions history.
Right. Hey, I always loved Wayne Fonts, man. I love the teams he had, you know, go run and shoot back in the day. Can't complain about my man Wayne. I liked him myself, so big shout out to Wayne Fonts.
Now, about Wayne, he couldn't settle on a quarterback. That was his doom too.
Yeah, that definitely was his downfall. All right, so now it's time for Now You Know. This week we're going to discuss one of the most integral parts of the game, the ball. We'll be back right after this.
Now You Know is brought to you by Foster Camera Solutions. For your home or business security needs, call Dan at Foster Camera Solutions for a free estimate at 248-672-8640. With no monthly fees and self-monitoring from your smartphone, computer, or tablet, let Foster Camera Solutions design a security camera system that fits your needs. You can also visit their Facebook page for more information at facebook.com/Foster Camera Solutions. Remember, Foster Camera Solutions, when securing your home or business.
What up, though? This is Kurt Steele, and welcome to this week's edition of Now You Know. This week, we're going to cover Rule 2 of the NFL rulebook, the ball. We're going to go over the dimensions of the ball, the handling of the ball prior to the game, and we're going to go over the supply and the handling of the ball during adverse weather. We're going to read the rules out of the rule book and break it down for you. So let's hop to it. Section 1, dimensions. The ball must be a Wilson hand-selected bearing the signature of the commissioner of the league, Roger Goodell. The ball shall be made up of an inflated 12.5 to 13.5 pounds urethane bladder enclosed in a pebble-grained leather case of natural tan color without corrugations of any kind. Now, it shall have the long form of the prolated spheroid, and the size and weight shall be the long axis 11 to 11.25 inches long. The circumference of the long area should be 28 to 28.5 inches around, and the short circumference shall be 21 to 21.25 inches around, and the weight shall be 14 to 15 ounces. Now let's break that down. It's gotta be a leather ball, gotta have the bladder in it. The bladder must be able to handle 12.5 to 13.5 PSI. So that's the air that's pumped into it. And it shall be a leather ball, no alterations at all, corrugations, no scuffs or anything. Now, the long, it has to be 11 to 11.25 inches long. At the middle of the ball, it'll be 28 to 28.5 inches around, and the short ends will be 21 to 21.25 inches around. The referee shall be the sole judge as whether the all balls offered comply with these specifications. A pump is to be furnished by the home club, and all balls shall remain under the supervision of the referee until they are delivered to the ball attendant just prior to the kickoff. Now, here is where Deflategate came in. Deflategate happened because the Patriots staff touched the balls after the referees inspected them and lowered the PSI during a cold weather game. During a cold weather, if you take a little air out of the ball, it makes the ball easier for the quarterback to handle and to throw and catch. So that's why they are so key on the referees maintaining control of the ball prior to the game and before it gets to the ball attendants on the sidelines. Section 2, the supply. Each team will make 12 primary and 12 backup balls available for testing by the referees no later than 2.5 hours prior to the kickoff so they can meet the league requirements. For all games, 6 new footballs sealed in a special box and shipped by the manufacturer to the referee will be opened in the official's locker room 2 hours and 15 minutes prior to the start of the game. These balls are specifically marked by the referee and used exclusively for the kicking game. In the event a home team ball does not conform to specifications or its supply is exhausted, the referee shall secure a proper ball from the visitors, and failing that, use of the best available ball is used. Any circumstances must be reported to the commissioner. That's where if one team or the referee picks the ball up and it doesn't meet the specifications, so say if something happens with one of the balls and it doesn't meet the specs, hey, they go to the visitor and say, hey, I need to get a new ball and we'll use this ball for the game and we'll report it up to hire. Now, in case of rain or wet, muddy, or slippery field, a playable ball shall be used at the request of the offensive team center. The game clock shall not stop for such action unless undue delay occurs. Now, saying that, hey, the ball, something's wrong with the ball, the offensive center can say, hey, ref, I need a new ball. The game clock will not stop unless there's something crazy that occurs. It is at the offensive team center's request, say if the ball is just too slippery and needs a new one, so he has to ask for it, but is of the essence, especially if they're on a 2-minute drill. You need to make sure that he gets up to the line and make sure he checks the ball so he can get it switched out. Now, it is the responsibility of the home team to furnish playable balls at all times by the attendants for either side of the playing field. And each ball, set of balls are marked for each team. So if you look on the ball, each offensive team has their logo on the ball so you can know which team's balls are being used. Hey, there you go. The NFL rule on the boss for the playing the game. If you don't know, now you know. Now let's get back to the Die Hard Den podcast with my man, Shawnee J. All right, we're back from Now You Know. Now it is time for this week's word of the week for our backpack giveaway. So the word this week for the word of the week is roar. So that's the word of the week this week. Now, you know, you have to send your email with your with however you're following on social media. The email is dieharddenpodcast@gmail.com. dieharddenpodcast@gmail.com. Okay. You make sure you include your username for whatever social media you're covering, you're following the podcast on, be it Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. All right. So next thing we have up, we got a new segment this week. We got a segment called Stump the Sean. Now, there was a show on a trivia sports show called Stump the Swan back in the day. This time, we're going to read some Lions trivia and see if we can stump old Shawnee J, who's our resident Lions history expert here at the Die Hard Den podcast. All right. So, first question. In 1963, George Plimpton tried out as a third-string quarterback for the Lions and turned his training camp experience into what book?
Paper Lion.
Paper Lion is correct.
Later became a movie starring Alan Alda.
Yep, that is correct. Okay, that's too easy. All right, let's do another one. What Lions head coach compiled a 5-27 record in two seasons and the worst winning percentage in league history for a non-interim coach?
Marty Morningweg.
Marty Morningweg is correct. Woo! We're flying through these questions. All right.
About you, tough guy.
Okay. The Lions have played what team twice a year since 1932 for the longest continuous running rivalry in the NFL?
I thought these questions were tough. The Green Bay Packers.
That is correct. All right. Now, here is the one question. What Lion was drafted in 1950 and was the last lineman to win the Heisman Trophy?
Leon Hart.
Oh, you got the first name right, but it was Leon Hall.
Ooh. Are you sure about that? I'll take it to the judge.
Yeah, I got the questions right here. The name is Leon Hall. But outstanding. 4 out of 5, my man. Good job this week. Good job. All right. So now it's time for us to go ahead and get on out of here. Let's go ahead and give the people the social media. How can they find you on social media, Shawnee J?
You find me on Facebook, named Sean Jennings. I'm also the head administrator of the Lions Truth Fans group on Facebook. If you want to, join, I'll be happy to add you. We'll be talking Lions all year long.
All right. So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Curtis Steele 14, CURTISSTEE14 on both platforms. Now you can follow the show on Facebook, facebook.com/DieHardDen. On Twitter, it's at DieHardDenPodC1. On Instagram, it is at die_hard_den_podcast for those platforms. And you can always email the show at dieharddenpodcast@gmail.com. Hey, we thank you for listening and we look forward to having more entries for the backpack draw. And again, the word of the week for this week is roar, R-O-A-R. So, hey, thank you for listening to the Die Hard Den podcast. We appreciate you. We're having fun bringing you new and fresh content. And we'll be back next week with some fresh look at after the Super Bowl and maybe take a gander at the XFL and what players you might want on the Lions coming after that season. So, hey, for my man, Shawnee J, this is Kurt Steele, and we are out.